Some while ago, the Revenue detected a growing trend for individuals to provide what were essentially employment services through the medium of an intermediary company, primarily to avoid PAYE and national insurance. Let us illustrate this by way of an example. Let us say we have a company which we shall call Online Tutors Limited, OTL. Dean is an employee of OTL. Dean receives a regular salary, which is subject to PAYE and NIC on a monthly basis. Dean decides that he no longer wishes this arrangement to continue, so he resigns his employment and sets up an intermediary company, which here we will call Dino Limited. The intermediary company, Dino Limited, has a contract under which it will provide services for the client company, OTL. In return for this, Dino Limited charges the client company a fee. Under general law, a company cannot be an employee of another company, so the fee will be paid to Dino Limited gross, i.e. without deduction of any PAYE or national insurance. Dean, being the shareholder and managing director of the company, will still need to be paid, but instead of taking a salary from the intermediary company, he is remunerated in the form of a dividend. Remember that a dividend is simply a way in which a company can distribute its profits to its shareholders. There are several significant advantages of paying a dividend instead of a salary. First of all, payments of dividends are not subject to the deduction of tax under PAYE. PAYE is only deducted on earnings, such as salaries. There are no national insurance contributions on dividends. Remember that NICs are paid on earnings, and dividends are not regarded as earnings. Finally, it is cheaper for the individual to receive a dividend than to receive a salary. Remember that salaries are taxed as general earnings, which is non-savings income, and if Dean is a higher rate taxpayer, his salary will be charged primarily at 40%. If Dean receives a salary in excess of £150,000, the excess will be charged to tax at 50%. On the other hand, dividends are only taxed at 10% up to the basic rate threshold and at 32.5% up to the higher rate limit. The additional rate of tax for dividends is 42.5%. Dividends are deemed to carry a notional 10% tax credit, which means basic rate taxpayers pay no extra tax on dividends received. We also need to consider the tax position of the intermediary, i.e. Dino Limited. And this will become clearer once you have studied the corporation tax module. At this point, it is sufficient to tell you that small companies will pay corporation tax at a maximum rate of 21% on their taxable profits. This is significantly cheaper than the top rate of income tax, which we know to be 50%. As you will see, by carrying out a relatively simple tax planning idea, Dean will have been able to save a significant amount by way of both income tax and national insurance. Many thousands of individuals opted to run their business via a limited company in order to take advantage of what was perceived to be a loophole in the legislation. The new personal service company rules introduced in Finance Act 2000 were specifically aimed at plugging this loophole. The legislation that followed the press release IR 35 was introduced with effect from the 6th of April 2000. The legislation will only apply in situations where the worker would be treated as an employee of the client if the intermediary company did not exist. So in our previous example, we would need to examine the relationship between the client, this being OTL, and the worker, Dean, ignoring the intermediary company in between. We use the normal employed versus self-employed criteria to determine whether, under normal circumstances, Dean would be treated as an employee of OTL. If the answer to this question is yes, then Dean is caught by the IR 35 rules. If the answer is no, then he is not. As such, the IR 35 legislation will typically catch one-man companies who work almost exclusively for one major client. Let us now examine the effect of the IR 35 rules. Returning to our original example, let us take a client company, who we shall call OTL, and a worker, who we shall call Dean. Rather than operating as an employee of OTL, Dean interposes an intermediary company in between, Any payments for services will be made by the client to the intermediary company. The worker can be remunerated from the company either by way of a dividend or by way of a salary. Any salaries paid by the company to the worker will be subject to PAYE and NIC in the normal way. The personal service company legislation applies to what is called income from relevant engagements. Relevant engagements in this scenario will simply mean contracts between the client and the intermediary company. Remember that these rules will only apply if the worker would normally be treated as an employee of the client under normal circumstances. The effect of the rules is to take any income from relevant engagements, and from that we deduct any salaries paid to the worker, which leaves us with income which has not been paid out by way of a salary. This excess is then deemed to have been paid out as a salary to the worker on the 5th of April. In essence, the revenue are pretending that the worker has received a salary at the year end, and this pretend salary will be subject to PAYE and NIC, as if it had been an actual salary. Remember, it is far more tax efficient for the worker to draw dividends from the company than salaries. So the revenue want to make sure that workers are remunerated by way of salaries in order that they can collect tax and NIC under PAYE. So once we're satisfied that the worker is caught by the personal service company rules, the crux of the legislation is how we calculate the deemed salary payment at the end of the tax year. We do this by using a pro forma. The starting point is income from relevant engagements. Remember that income from relevant engagements is income paid by a client to an intermediary, where the worker would be an employee of the client under normal circumstances. It is possible for an intermediary company to receive income from non-relevant engagements, in which case this income is ignored. From this income, we take an automatic 5% deduction. This 5% deduction is fixed and is designed to give the worker some compensation for the fact that there will be costs of running the intermediary service company. Any expenses paid by the intermediary, which would be deductible from taxable earnings if met by the worker, are also deductible. These will include expenses typically allowable under Section 336 and any qualifying travel expenses reimbursed to the worker by the employer. The worker is treated as having a continuous employment with the intermediary. Therefore, qualifying travel expenses essentially mean travel and related meal and accommodation costs incurred doing the job or travelling to a temporary workplace. Professional subscriptions, etc., could also be deducted here. Any contributions made by the intermediary company to an approved pension scheme on behalf of the worker can also be deducted. Remember that whenever a company pays a salary to a worker, the company will have to pay employer's Class 1 secondary NIC on the worker's pay. This is also deductible in arriving at deemed salary. In addition, any Class 1A contributions paid by the employer on benefits provided to the worker are also deductible. Finally, we can deduct any actual salaries paid to the worker and any cash equivalents of benefits in kind provided by the intermediary company to the worker. This will include company cars, interest-free loans, etc. So income from relevant engagements, less all the allowable deductions, leaves us with the gross payment, which is deemed to have been made by the intermediary company as at the end of the tax year. Once again, remember that whenever an employer makes a payment of salary, be it real or deemed, the employer must withhold Class 1 secondary national insurance contributions. As such, we must recognise that this gross deemed payment at the end of the year will include an amount of employer's NIC. The employer's NIC included within the gross payment is the gross amount. Here we have called it H, multiplied by 12.8 over 112.8. This NIC is an actual cost for the intermediary, and it will be paid over to the revenue under PAYE in the normal way. The gross deemed payment, less any employer's NIC included within that payment, leaves us with the net salary, which is deemed to have been paid to the worker as at the end of the tax year. This deemed salary is subject to PAYE and national insurance contributions as if it had been a normal salary. As such, the PAYE and NIC must be paid over to the revenue 14 days after the end of the tax month, which in this instance will mean no later than the 19th of April. In practice, it will be very difficult for a company to organise itself so as to accurately calculate the deemed payment and account for the tax and national insurance within a two-week period. The revenue will therefore accept an estimated amount, with an adjustment being made later on in the year. This pro forma looks convoluted, so let us see if we can make sense of it by working through a practice example. Here we have a client company who we shall call Online Tutors Limited. The worker, Dean, is caught by the legislation because he would be treated as an employee of OTL were it not for the existence of an intermediary company, which here we have called Dino Limited. The majority of Dino Limited's income comes from OTL. The fees paid by OTL to the intermediary company in 2010-11 total £50,000, and these are income from relevant engagements. Dino Limited also performed services for one additional client, which here we have called Other Limited. The fees paid by Other Limited to Dino Limited total £8,000, and this is income received from non-relevant engagements. This is because under the normal employed versus self-employed rules, Dean will not be treated as an employee of Other Limited.
In 2010-11, Dino Limited paid Dean a salary of £1,000 every month, being £12,000 in the year. The only other expense incurred by Dino Limited is the reimbursement of qualifying travel expenses to the worker of £1,500. Our task here is to calculate the amount of salary which is deemed to have been paid to Dean as at the end of the tax year, i.e., as at the 5th of April 2011.
The starting point in the pro forma is the income from relevant engagements, which here totals £50,000. From this, we take the fixed 5% deduction, leaving us with net income of £47,500. The next deductible expense in arriving at the gross deemed payment is the reimbursed travel expenses of £1,500. Next, Dean's actual salary was £12,000. The intermediary company will have paid employer's NIC on this actual salary, which is deductible. The Class 1 secondary NIC is the earnings of £12,000 less the earnings threshold multiplied by 12.8%. Finally, any actual salary or benefits paid to the worker by the intermediary company can be deducted. This leaves us with a gross payment deemed to have been made by Dino Limited at the end of the year of £33,196. This gross payment includes employer's national insurance contributions, so we need to deduct these NICs to arrive at the net payment. The NIC included in the gross payment is £33,196 multiplied by 12.8 over 112.8. This employer's NIC of £3,767 will need to be paid to HMRC. The gross deemed payment less the national insurance gives a net salary deemed to have been paid to the worker at the end of the tax year. At this point in your calculation, I would always recommend that you do a quick check. If we take the deemed salary paid to Dean of £29,429 and multiply this by the employer's NIC rate of 12.8%, it should give us the employer's NIC of £3,767. Here, this will reconcile. The deemed salary to the worker is subject to PAYE and employees' Class 1 national insurance contributions in the normal way. As far as Dean is concerned, when putting together his tax computation for 2010-11, his taxable earnings for the year is the actual salary paid of £12,000 plus the deemed salary of £29,429.
This will be taxed on him as non-savings income in 2010-11.
There are some other points to be aware of with regard to personal service companies. The rules will only apply where the worker owns 5% or more of the shares in the intermediary company. This is very likely to be the case in the vast majority of instances, because if a worker sets up an intermediary service company, it is likely that he will want to control that company by having more than half of the shares. Hence, the 5% rule will be satisfied in nearly every instance. It is not possible to avoid the IR35 legislation by having a partnership interposed in the middle instead of a company. The IR35 rules will apply to a worker who supplies his services through a partnership, as long as that worker, together with his associates, is entitled to more than 60% of the profits of the partnership.
Services provided by domestic workers, nannies and butlers are also within the scope of the rules.
Going back to the start of this session, you will recall that the way a worker will typically take remuneration from a company is not by way of a salary, but will instead be by way of a dividend. If the worker draws a dividend and is also treated as receiving a deemed employment payment under the personal service company rules, the same income is being taxed twice. In this instance, the intermediary company will make a claim for relief. The relief will be given by setting the deemed employment payment against the dividend so as to reduce the amount of the taxable dividend. In effect, therefore, dividends will only be taxed to the extent that they exceed the deemed salary payment. The effect of this will be that in most cases, the dividends will be ignored. The relief applies to dividends paid in the same year as the deemed employment payment, or in subsequent years. Relief is given against dividends paid in the same year before those in future years. If you remember back to your PAYE session, you will recall that any salaries, etc., paid by employers to their workers need to be summarised on an end-of-year form P35. The P35 is normally due no later than the 19th of May following the end of the tax year.
HMRC has recognised that there is a relatively short period of time between the date of the deemed payment and the due date for filing of the form P35. So they have said they will accept forms P35 which contain provisional figures.
Amended forms P35 can be submitted to the Revenue no later than the 31st of January following the end of the tax year. While the Revenue will accept provisional forms P35 and will accept an estimated payment of PAYE and NIC on the 19th of April, they have stated that they will charge interest on any tax and NIC which happens to be paid late.
Finance Act 2007 has introduced anti-avoidance measures to deal with managed service companies. A managed service company, or MSC, is a service company which provides workers and contractors with a composite company to manage their invoicing and accounting. Some of these composite companies were also set up with the intention of helping workers avoid falling foul of the IR35 rules. In a typical composite company structure, a number of contractors become non-director shareholders in a company, which we shall call MSC Limited. MSC Limited is managed and run by the scheme provider. The scheme provider is normally a separate company set up solely for this purpose. The contractor carries out work for a client, and the client is invoiced by MSC Limited. The client pays MSC Limited. MSC Limited pays an arrangement fee to the scheme provider, and thereafter pays the contractor by way of a low salary plus dividends on his shares, hence avoiding PAYE and NIC. Typically, contractors will have different classes of shares in MSC Limited to make the allocation of dividends straightforward. The contractor does not have to worry about invoicing. All he does is provide worksheets, etc., to MSC Limited. All compliance obligations for the company will be dealt with by MSC Limited. The contractor is not caught by IR35 as he does not have 5% of the shares in MSC Limited. Even if the contractor should technically be caught by IR35, the revenue simply does not have the manpower to challenge all potential cases. It was estimated that around 200,000 individuals worked through the medium of an artificial composite company operated by a dedicated service provider. The service provider would, of course, charge a management fee for assisting the contractors in reducing their tax and NIC liabilities. In the pre-budget report in December 2006, the government announced plans to attack these structures and remove the tax advantages that composite companies offered their clients. From the 6th of April 2007, all payments received by individuals who provide their services through an MSC or composite company will be subject to PAYE. This will mean that whenever an MSC pays a dividend to a contractor, the MSC must withhold tax and NIC under PAYE.
In arriving at the amount of the deemed employment income, any expenses which would have been allowable from employment income if met by the worker can be deducted. However, when operating via a managed service company, each engagement will be treated as a separate employment. Any costs of travel from the contractor's home to the place where his duties are carried out are disallowable. Similarly, no deduction is given for the 5% notional costs of running the company. This can have the effect that a deemed payment calculated under the MSC rules will be higher than that calculated under the normal IR35 rules. We will illustrate this in a moment.
Where PAYE liabilities cannot be recovered from the MSC, the revenue can transfer the debt to either the directors of the MSC, the scheme provider, or other persons involved in the MSC, i.e. potentially the contractors themselves, where all other attempts to recover the debt have failed.